Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to talk college hockey. This is USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com. USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. Be a part of the conversation. Give us a call now or message us on Twitter at USCHO. This is USCHO Live.
Well, good evening and welcome to USCHO Live from USCHO.com on this Tuesday, October 20th. I'm Ed Trefsker, and alongside me is Jim Connolly. Hello, Jim.
Very good evening to you, Ed.
Actually, you're not really alongside me, only in the imagination of the internet. In case people don't know, Jim is in the suburbs of Boston right now, and I'm smack dab in Rochester, New York. So we're about several hours apart, if you had to drive.
Yeah, plenty. I don't think I would want to ever have to drive it to do a show. Let's put it that way.
No. I had to drive it to do a couple of shows last year at the Frozen Four, but that's beside
Very
the point.
True.
Anyway, things are getting underway in college hockey. We have had a few league games, very few, but lots of great interconference play. As opposed to last week, where it was a really bad week for teams in the top 10 of the USCHO.com poll, this week, the top 10 teams, only among them had just one loss.
Yeah, and I believe that was actually a win last Tuesday. Last Tuesday for Bowling Green. So on the weekend itself, it was a perfect weekend for the top 10. So it didn't. You don't have the same volatility that the poll had a week ago. And I think maybe, I don't want to say that voters are starting to figure it out. There's still a lot up in the air, and there are a lot of teams that are starting to make a name for themselves, starting to move up the rankings, and might continue to do so as weekends progress and some have a little bit more success. But it's still a pretty unstable mix of teams out there. And, you know, we'll get into some of the undefeated still. And, you know, not even every one of the undefeated teams, and I'm talking about perfect, you've played games and you don't have a loss or a tie on your record. You can't even look at that list and say that all of those teams are in the top 20 of the country right now, because the reality is that they're not. So it'll be interesting to continue to see things evolve within the poll and just within the success for some of these top teams.
When we talk about the poll, I do want to interject one thing. There was a little bit of a firestorm, if you want to call it that, in social media, particularly on Twitter yesterday, after the poll came out, and winless Minnesota at 0-3 hung on in the poll at number 19, tied for number 19. And there was a lot of questioning about that. Oh, what's wrong with you, us Joe folks? Are you just going on reputation, or what's going on here? Well, first of all, as Todd Molesky, our executive editor, explained very well, it's not us Joe deciding who's in it any more than it's the weatherman deciding what the weather is outside. We have 50 poll voters all over the country, coaches, assistant coaches, writers, I think there are a few sports information directors, different personnel, 50 people equally distributed among the leagues, pretty much equally distributed from coast to coast, who all submit a ballot. It gets totaled up, and when you total it all up, that's what happened with Minnesota. So, first of all, it's not us Joe's fault. Second of all, I think what we saw there, Jim, and you can chime in, correct me, upbraid me, whatever you want to do. The reason you see that happen is that the voters, I think, many of them tend to say, okay, a team was at number 4, and then they were at, like, number 15, and they got beat by a team that was here, so I can move them down to here on my ballot and still looking at what they think is the potential of the team, even though they are winless. Nobody expects Minnesota to be 0-34.
I think that's exactly right. It's a reputational vote. Sometimes your reputation does precede you, and they look at the fact that Vermont is considered one of the better teams in the country, and they beat them the first weekend, then the sweep against Minnesota Duluth, which is the number 7 team in the country. So I think that most people understand that, you know, they've lost three games, but they've lost them to some pretty good teams. They're going to play a Northeastern team that I think coming into the season people thought was strong that hasn't performed very well this weekend. My big concern about Minnesota, and this is one of the things that actually took it off my ballot, was the fact that in three games, Minnesota has scored one goal. And that is a major problem. You can't expect to be a competitive team when you're not scoring. And we were just talking off the air about a team from last year that seems to be putting up some numbers now. But Minnesota, that's a team that you're expecting. You have so many blue chip players on that team. And up and down that roster, there are names of players you know are going to score goals. You're three games into the season and you've been outscored 9-1. I know that you've played some quality opponents, but you can't allow that to happen if you're Minnesota. If you don't start generating some goals soon. Listen, last year we can remember Wisconsin hung on despite a horrible record for a number of weeks, kind of on that reputational vote. I don't know that Minnesota could even possibly have the same fate as Wisconsin in the end, but Minnesota needs to get their act together offensively. They're clicking. They've got to get, you know, guys that are you know, your best. The old cliche, your best players have to be your best players. They've got so many talented guys. Those guys have to step up and just kind of find it in their hearts to say, we're going to go out and score goals. Because one goal is not going to cut it. You know, averaging 0.33 goals a game will never cut it in college hockey.
Right, exactly. And I think that, again, enough voters had to rank Minnesota somewhere between number 15 and number 20 on their ballot to put them at that tied for number 19 spot. And that meant that those voters said, okay, Wisconsin or Minnesota is better than 40 or 42 or 45 teams in college hockey. And you know what? If you go up to anybody and say, hey, is Minnesota better than 40 teams in Division I hockey? I would say most people would say yes, you know, just off the top of their heads.
I think that's right. I think, you know, that's exactly what it is that you can look there and stack them against other teams and say, you know, they have played some of the tougher opponents. Once they end up playing some teams that maybe aren't as tough, then they could do, you know, start putting some wins together. But that time has to come this weekend. They've got a Northeastern team that is reeling, having not played well themselves, having not produced the number of goals that their offense says that they're going to produce. They have Northeastern going into their building. They've got to do something with that. So that's one of those things where it becomes a double-edged sword for not only the voters, but for Minnesota. Listen, you got to get your act together because we can't leave you in this poll that much longer the way you're playing.
Right, exactly. Well, there are still some teams without a blemish on their record. Quite a few teams. Of course, the Ivies haven't hit the ice yet, so they still have 0-0 records. But Michigan's at 2-0. Quinnipiac is at 3-0, and they're, as we're broadcasting right now, up 2 goals on Maine, 2-0 in the second period. UMass at 3-0-0. UMass Lowell, 3-0-0. Merrimack, 2-0-0. And 4 wins and no losses or ties for Nebraska, Omaha, and St. Cloud State. It's still early in the season, but this is great momentum going into the season. Is there a team among these, Jim, that really is a surprise? And of course, we do have to consider who their opponents have been.
Yeah, and that's fair because I'm not going to try to take anything away from Mercyhurst, but that was Michigan's two opponents. Quinnipiac, 2 of their wins come against Arizona State. UMass Lowell, 2 of their wins come against Colorado College, who many believe might be the 8th team in the NCHC for the second straight year. But I did get to see that series, and that Colorado College team I think is going to be pretty good. So it's hard to really say, but you know, I look at UMass at 3-0, They had to take a trip to Colorado College, and this is the UMass out in Amherst, took a trip to Colorado College. They had a good comeback win. They come home, and they played AIC. Maybe not the toughest test, but they survived the test, and they're scoring goals. And the same can be said for Merrimack. They're scoring a ton of goals. But then there's two teams in there, maybe even three when you count Michigan in, that you almost knew were going to be strong contenders. And I think Nebraska-Omaha is playing some unbelievable hockey, and it's the Austin Ortega show up there. I know he had four goals this weekend. That kid is something special. I think he's an early season favorite for the Hobie Baker Award. But the way his numbers have been over the first few weekends, and the way you can continue to see him progressing. At the same time, they're not giving up a lot of goals. You know, you've got Ortega's got five goals and assists through four games. Those are pretty impressive points. So I believe that maybe of all those undefeateds we've just mentioned, that might be the strongest. That might be the most ready for primetime team coming off of Frozen Four. But all of those teams, it's nice to just, as you started to allude to, it's nice to get your foot out the door in a good manner. There's nothing worse than being a team with a lot of hope. Take Minnesota, for example.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. From U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him opening his own clothing store at the age of 18, one in 138,000. Excited to be a part of pop culture, he packed for the big city. The odds of finding someone to invest in his vision? One in 4.5 million. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? One in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? One in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Oh, hi. Do you know what this is the sound of? It's the sound of me getting rewarded for doing my part to prevent wildfires. See, right now, I'm getting a big, remarkably heartfelt bear hug from Smokey Bear. Thanks, big guy. And now we're shaking. Okay. First, I made sure there were no low-hanging branches when I set up my campfire. Hey, Smokey, let me down for just a second. I need to make sure everyone can hear this. There we go. Then, when we were packing up to leave, I drowned out my campfire, stirred it, drowned it out again, and then made sure to feel it if it was cold. Oh, Smokey Bear really loves it when you do that, don't you, Smokey? Oh, he lets his hugs do the talking. Visit SmokeyBear.com to learn tips to prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
We asked kids what it took to be a dad. This is what they had to say. a father is always present. I mean, what real father figure can you have if they're not there?
In order to be a good dad, you need to love your son. You need to put gas in your car so you don't break down in the middle of nowhere. And you need to make some breakfast. Yep.
I mean, just to maybe play like a board game with me, or to just stay home and play some video games with me. Just to do like that one little thing is what I really look forward to.
I'm not asking him to be a perfect dad, but he should try.
He's just a constant force in my life.
There's no other type of love like a dad's love, because it's not comparable to anything else.
Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
This is USCHO Live.
And we're back with USCHO Live. Sorry about that interruption, but Blog Talk Radio is an inferior and buggy product. And we thought they had fixed all this stuff, and they've got new features and they still don't work. So we're going to try to find something else for this program. But I would seriously encourage you not to use them.
I think that that's fair.
non-league woes for the Big Ten and WCHA. Big Ten 5-12-3, 0-6-0 against the NCHC, and Wisconsin and Minnesota both 0-3.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you can look at the WCHA as well, and they're 1-10-2 against the NCHC. Maybe it's saying more about the NCHC than it is about other conferences, but the Big Ten, I mean, their 5-12-3 record, you know, it's just it's absurd at this point. You know, this is a conference of six supposed powerhouses that they're just not living up to their billing, and they've got to, you know, these teams need to produce better products on the ice, and the fact that they're not doing it, it puts a lot of concern in, and, you know, you can't fault some of these teams for maybe saying, wow, maybe the grass was greener when it was not all Big Ten. That's an easy thing to look from the outside and say.
Yeah, could be, but, you know, we've seen over the years teams and leagues kind of go in waves up and down. Two years ago, NCHC had a tough year.
There can be cycles, and it's really dictated by these few weeks here where it's non-league play, whether these teams are going to be good or not. That's for the Big Ten, it's all done by, you know, by Thanksgiving. You have played all of your non-league games, so you better have your success in the first 7-8 weeks of the season, or it's going to be a long season. You know, you know that you're going to be fighting to put two teams out of the six into the tournament. It's more than likely going to be one. So that's one of the big challenges that league is going to have. They've got to come out of the gate faster. And when they're not, and they're getting home games. That's one of the big things, is that a lot of their teams, there have been some teams that have hit the road, but a lot of their games are at home or could be at home if they want to pay the guarantees. They have the budgets to do it. So maybe it's how you structure your schedule, and they're not doing a good job at that right now.
Well, that could be part of it. A league that has not really stepped up, even though it's getting a few more home games, is Atlantic Hockey. Right now they're 5-18-2 out of conference at this juncture. Last year they were 5-19. Some big wins, of course, the home-and-home sweep with Bentley, and we'll talk with our head coach Ryan Soderquist in just a few moments. Still some struggles for that league. The disparity is not as big as it was, and people shouldn't be surprised to see Bentley upset Northeastern, even though it took a couple of really huge goaltending efforts. Things are not so far apart that it's like it was 15 years ago, where even coming close would have been a huge moral victory.
Yeah, the days of moral victories in that league, I think, are gone. I mean, Mercyhurst goes out to Michigan and plays two very tough games. They played the Wolverines very tough out there. But I don't think Rick Gawkins sitting there saying, oh, at least we got moral victories. Those really were for the days of the MAC, or the early days of Atlantic Hockey. But credit where credit's due. You know, Mercyhurst gets a big win at home. And I think, you know, the Northeastern sweep by Bentley, the home and home, says a lot of good things. But it's a consistency top to bottom, and you need that consistency You hope that the scholarship increase that we talked about last week will eventually have that impact. We'll see how it goes, but you hope that maybe it's just baby steps. It's the newest league. But the good thing that they can look back on and say, look at the record and say, we're not much worse than the Big Ten.
Well, there you go. Coming up, we're going to be talking in the second interview segment with Travis Roy. We've only got a few seconds here, Jim. We'll probably have some more time after his interview to talk about our remembrances from back then. But I hope you'll check that out. And by the way, after the program, or if you're listening and can look and listen at the same time, walk and chew gum at the same time, you definitely need to check out Dave Hendrickson's interview with Travis Roy that was published today at uscho.com.
Yeah, fantastic piece. And we'll get to talk to Travis later in the show. And he's a fantastic kid. And this piece really does a nice job of bringing to light some of what his life struggles are like right now.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Bentley head coach Ryan Soderquist when USCHO Live continues from USCHO.com.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
Only in the forest can you see this. And this. And this. But nothing beats the moment you see that.
Cool!
That's your child's eyes opening up to a world of possibilities. Because one trip to the forest can spark a world of difference.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go, like hiking, canoeing, fishing, or camping. Or create your own adventure with family and friends, and you might just see this. Your moment's out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gionta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com.
This is USCHO Live.
And we're back with USCHO Live. We're having a little difficulty getting our next guest on the phone, so we're going to go now to our interview with Travis Roy.
It was 20 years ago to this exact day that college hockey had one of its most tragic moments when Travis Roy, his first shift into his Boston University career, lost an edge, went into the boards awkwardly, and since then has been paralyzed. When you think of tragedy, not too often do you think of triumph, but I feel like that is what this story is about. And we are, and I am honored, and I know Ed is as well, to have Travis Roy joining the program right now. Travis, thanks for taking the time and welcome.
It's my pleasure.
Your story, I guess, most people in the college hockey world are familiar with it. There were so many people. I mean, I remember exactly where I was that day, and I'm not trying to put this in one of those lights of you remember where you were in 1980 when the goal was scored or when tragedy has happened in other forms. But it still stands out to me as a moment that shook the college hockey world, but then it also brought the college hockey world together. And you don't really often see so many people be able to support one person or one tragedy so well in anything, let alone sports. Can you just kind of encompass how that all felt to you as the person who was at the center of this attention?
It's been truly incredible to be a part of exactly what you're touching upon. As horrible as the injury was, and as challenging as the first few days and weeks and months and really years were, the humanity that my family and I have seen, that we've all got to see, through the early support of me, initially from the fundraising that went on, to how we've been able to transition that through the work of the Travis Roy Foundation and the fundraising we've done there. But there's something very special about the hockey community. And I have received extraordinary support from the other end of ComAv at Boston College to the folks at North Dakota throughout the years, and everywhere in between. But there's definitely been something special. I don't know what it is, but there's been an energy that has kind of followed this story, and I'm grateful for it, and I'm also proud of what we've all done with that. I mean, it was a sad story, and we have been able to make. It's much more than just me breaking my neck. It is now millions of dollars have been raised for research, and a lot of lives have been touched.
Travis, I'm going to get into some of the foundation stuff in a minute, but there was something that struck me. I think it was about 2 years after your injury. I believe it was the summer of 97. I was at a fundraiser, and I saw your father speak, and it was something that, you know, I think maybe people thought that you were going to attend, and you were ill, I believe he told us at the time was pneumonia, and that I don't think is what people understand. Was this was not just an injury, and okay, now I've got to figure out how to lead my life as a quadriplegic. You had so many medical issues after that injury that there's some miracles just that you made it through those early years healthy.
Paralysis is just an absolutely devastating condition, and it never stops. There are no breaks, and unfortunately there are complications that do catch up that are common with paralysis, whether they're pressure sores that prevent you from being able to be in your wheelchair for an extended period of time. Pneumonia is absolutely deadly to people with paralysis. More personal issues. So, you know, whether it's care attendants not showing up on time, or it takes a lot of timing and planning and work to function on a daily basis. That's why, you know, I'm so impressed with somebody like Jack Strablonski or Matt Brown, a couple other people that were injured playing high school hockey, and really everybody that I've met that's paralyzed and young and strong and healthy, and then trying to make that transition to be productive, to be a productive part of society and those two people especially have, you know, gone back to school and doing a lot with their lives. But it is not easy. And as I say, the hard part is you never get a vacation. I mean, I just to have a moment to take a full breath of air and not be limited by limited diaphragm and abdominal muscles and you know, I just crave that. I crave that peace, that energy that quite frankly I haven't had in 20 years.
We're talking with Travis Roy, and Travis, your foundation has done such wonderful things, and I think when people think of, you know, the effort to raise funds, you know, at the beginning it was to just help you with getting by in your life and the major changes that have to go on in somebody's life when they have become paralyzed. But it has gone way beyond that. Did you have a vision, or when did the vision come to you that this could be more than just let's help me? And it became more about let's help other people and let's find ways to cure people if there is a way someday that have this paralysis?
It happened first after my injury, and it happened when I was still in the hospital and on the rehab floor, and I would see some of my fellow paralyzed friends and patients that quite frankly they didn't have the insurance to cover what their needs, that they didn't have the fundraising that was done afterwards. They didn't have, some didn't even have the family or friends there to really support them and pick up the slack. And I just, as the energy and the support for me continued, I just thought I can use this to benefit others. And so my family and I made a decision early on to start the Travis Roy Foundation. I feel like everybody has a foundation nowadays, but back then, you know, we were well-intended, and we had no idea what we were doing. But slowly, with the help of a law firm and a lawyer, we got things on track, and they've been administering the foundation pro bono ever since. And we raised a little bit of money, and the hockey community, as I mentioned, has been very supportive. The other thing that's amazing is just that it continues to grow. I thought my story, I thought the work of the foundation, that it would get harder and more challenging, and we'd kind of probably drift away at some point to where we weren't needed or didn't have the impact. And instead, it's just the opposite. We raise roughly $1 million a year. This year, we're probably going to raise a couple $1 million with this big event that we're having on Tuesday. We're absolutely have an impact on research and those individual grants that help people out to become a little more independent. So the foundation it's been a labor of love. It's been an education. But I can tell you right now, we're doing good things, and we're doing it in an efficient manner, and we're making a difference.
Travis, I'm maybe putting you on the spot right here, but do you have some anecdotes, some stories to tell about what you have been able to accomplish as a foundation, the steps you've been able to take in fighting this problem of paralysis and the issues that surround it?
Yeah, there's a lot of different pieces. We stepped up shortly after Matt Brown, a paralyzed hockey player here in Massachusetts, and we helped to provide him with a van. It's nearly a $50,000 item. That was kind of above and beyond what we usually do, but because the support we had, we wanted to make sure we helped out the fellow hockey player. That's a little story. There's other stories of a gentleman with young kids, married, paralyzed in a freak accident, and he couldn't get up to the second floor, you know, to tuck his kids in bed and to be kind of as active as he wanted in his kid's life. And so we helped provide an elevator lift it's my most favorite quote out of any thank you letter we ever received. And he said, I thank God on the way up, when I see my kids, and I thank the Travis Roy Foundation on the way down. And these little grants They're not huge. They're not changing lives, but they absolutely do create a little relief and a little independence and help people live more productive and lives. So that's on the individual grant side. On the research side, we're in the middle of funding a project with the Christo Rey Foundation called the Big Idea. Functional electrical stimulation is kind of become a hot topic, and that's showing some benefits to helping people with paralysis with controlling their bowel, their bladder, sexual function, a little bit of mobility. I don't know that I would call it functional mobility yet, but it is showing progress. We fund a researcher at Harvard for many years, at Stanford, at the Burke Research Institute. So again, because of the money we're raising and the amount we're raising, it's a lot of fun to be able to hand out those bigger research grants and to know that we're funding some of the top labs in the world.
We're talking with Travis Roy, former Boston University Terrier, and I guess we can now say at least an honorary Boston Bruin, a really nice gesture by the Bruins last week, signing you to a one-day contract. And you talk about the college hockey world, something like that at with the Bruins, or the support that you were able to get within Boston University, which, being a local Boston guy, I've seen it, and it's just amazing how much that community was able to come together. Do you feel like it's almost hard to even get the word thank you out because of what people have been able to do for you, or is that just really easy for you to just show your thanks all the time?
It's a challenge because I want people to feel the sincerity and the depth of my appreciation because it goes so much deeper. Sometimes, you know, we say the word thank you often too casually, and for my instance, for the work we've done with the foundation, for the support that I received early on, to people I hear that have read my book, it is so important to me that people realize just how grateful I am, that I take none of it for granted, that I realize how fortunate I am, how fortunate we've been with the foundation to have the continued support. So it's something that I think a lot about, and it is a challenge to make sure that people know that the depth of my appreciation for what they've done.
Well, Travis, I think the way you've given back, I think the whole hockey world knows how much you have been touched and how much you continue to touch other people. Travis Roy, we appreciate your time. We wish you the best of luck in your daily life and in your health, but in all your efforts that you are putting forward to try to eradicate paralysis in this country and in this world. So thanks so much for your time and best of luck.
I appreciate it, and if there's somebody that, as I say, our fundraising is more grassroots based. I hope people might take time to log on to the TravisRoyFoundation.org website and make a $20 donation or so, whatever you're comfortable with, and just help us kind of continue our work and increase our impact. So thank you for your time, and just a thank you to those that have been out there that have supported me and the foundation that are listening.
That's TravisRoyFoundation.org, a great website, a great organization, and a great person in Travis Roy. You are listening to USCHO Live. We will be back to close this show out momentarily. Stay tuned.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. This is USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gionta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com.
This is USCHO Live.
And we're back with USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker along with Jim Connolly.
We are joined now by our second guest of the night, and his team may have shocked a few people last weekend. I don't know that any coach, when they win games, considers it a shock, but anybody that looks at the Northeastern home and home and thought that Northeastern was going down with this Kevin Waugh-led Northeastern team got a shock when they looked at the fact that Bentley was able to sweep Northeastern. We're joined by Ryan Soderquist, Bentley's head coach right now. Ryan, heck of a weekend, and that's just got to be one that, as I said, maybe it never shocks the coaches, but at least it puts a smile on your face.
Yeah, certainly it was a great weekend for our guys, and to come away with two wins versus a great program like Northeastern was a great start to our season.
You actually had a couple of home games the week before against Mercyhurst, some close contests, that's for certain. How do you feel your team is playing right now, four games in? I know it's a short sample size, but are you liking what you're seeing from your team?
Well, I think that we definitely headed in the right direction on Saturday night. Quite frankly, Friday night, our goaltender played extremely well, and I would have confidence saying that we stole that game on Friday night, and Northeastern played extremely well. But our effort coming back into our building on Saturday night, I believe, is a stepping stone for our program this year. The 60-minute effort that we gave, the battling, the emotion that we played with, certainly something that we can build on here for the future in this season, and I hope that will catapult us into a lot of victories this year.
Is that what you have to do when you're looking at your non-league schedule, is put together a schedule that gives you some games where if you can perform well, regardless of the result, at least you'll give yourself some good experience and maybe a little bit of good confidence?
Yeah, certainly. I think that, you know, in our non-conference schedule, we're looking to also, you know, play a team maybe that we have never had a chance to play before, playing a building that we have never played in before. But certainly early on, you're looking to play 60 minutes of hockey and give that great effort. You know, the wins and losses will come if you stick to that process. So that's all we're looking for early in the year versus the non-conference games. It's just a good 60-minute effort, and we did get that on Saturday night.
We're talking to Ryan Soderquist, the head coach of Bentley. I want to talk a little bit about some of the individuals on your team, and your captain starts it right away. At this point, four games, four goals, and that's Andrew Gladiak. You know he's a player that's performed well for 3 years with your program. His leadership is one part of it, but when you can translate leadership into scoring goals and really lead on the ice, has to be an easier way to make a living as a coach.
Oh, certainly. I mean, your best players have to be your best players on the ice and perform as well. I thought on the first weekend, it took Andrew a little bit to get going this season, but certainly this past weekend with four goals on the weekend and certainly all three on Friday night certainly led us into the battle and got us that victory on Saturday.
Goaltending, Jason Argue, you mentioned he steals the game on Friday night, but he still finishes with an obscene number of saves on the weekend. I know you don't love to have to depend on your goaltender every night, but it has to feel nice to just know, even the players playing in front of him, that you can make a few mistakes and you have a guy there that has your back.
Certainly, Jason is a goaltender that we know can steal us some games. We're certainly looking at him to hold teams to two goals or less every single night, and we feel that he can do that. This weekend obviously showed that he can save the puck. Friday night, yes, we did hang him out to dry a little bit. But on Saturday night, I think that we did a great job, our defense in front of him, in terms of, you know, clearing out second and third chance opportunities. He saw a lot of the shots that he took on Saturday night. So if we can limit the opposing team to kind of getting those shots from outside the dotted area, I think that we can be successful in our season. But he's definitely a guy that even if he could give up a bad goal, the bench would never get rattled. They know that he's going to battle back and be fine.
We're speaking with Bentley head coach Ryan Soderquist. When I saw that you downed Northeastern on Friday night, I said, oh, boy, wait till the Huskies have to go in and face that sellout crowd at the Jar the next night. What was the atmosphere like on Saturday night in your smaller arena?
It was great. Obviously, I think it was a great game for our student body and for our school to be part of. I credit Jim Madigan quite a bit for giving us the opportunity to come play in our own building. We're a growing program and certainly going to take some home games like that. We also have Mark Dennehy bringing in Merrimack Warriors in a couple weeks. So I really want to thank those guys for giving us the opportunity. But the atmosphere was great. I mean, we sold out our building in I believe it was like 5 hours when they put the tickets out. So that was great to be part of that and certainly bodes well for the future in terms of us building a facility on our campus. I think it will be great.
That was announced last spring that sites are being evaluated and so forth for that. How are things going with that progress?
Things continue to progress pretty well. So I feel very, very confident where we are right now. And I believe throughout the course of this year, we'll have further announcements that will be very exciting.
Ryan, when you look at that whole new arena on campus, and the Watertown Arena, the John A. Ryan Arena, is still a fine arena. But it takes it away from the campus and it takes it away from the whole student body experience. What will an on-campus arena really bring to the school, not just your team in recruiting, but to the school in general?
Certainly. In terms of being off campus, it's just far enough off. It's only a couple miles down the street, but certainly it's not part of the community. To have a facility that's part of the community that the students see on a daily basis and know that's where your Division I hockey team plays, I think will be a very important piece of our community at Bentley. I think the students will gather around that, as well as the professors and all the faculty and staff. So I think it can do a tremendous amount for our school, school pride, being a Division I program and being able to bring Northeastern or Harvard or Dartmouth to our campus is going to be a great thing.
We're talking with Ryan Soderquist, the head coach at Bentley. Ryan, this year, it's a part of the whole bump up in scholarships that's been going on for a few years now. You get to 14 scholarships in Atlantic hockey. Are we seeing that have the impact on the ice yet? Is that something that still maybe takes a few years to build? And do you realize that 18 is still really where this league needs to set a goal?
Yeah, certainly. I think that 14 has helped quite a bit. I do think it probably takes 2 to 3 years until you start seeing some of those results. Certainly, we didn't just throw the extra scholarships into one class. I think you try to be as balanced as possible. Certainly, 18 is the golden number that I think that most programs understand that if the NCAA allows 18, it would be nice to be there. But right now, I think that 14 has given us a nice jump, and I certainly do believe that we will continue to head in the right direction over the next couple of years in the scholarship department.
Has 14 allowed you at least to be a little bit more creative with what you can do in terms of offering? I know that most, even 18, schools with 18, are trying to do everything they can to break scholarships up and give 3 for 4 and half scholarships and all that. Can you at least get a little bit more creativity?
Yeah, it definitely allows you that. Depth in college hockey is extremely important. Certainly today with injuries, concussions now, guys can be out for 2, 3, 4 weeks with a simple concussion. So certainly having proper depth on your team is important to win. I think that getting to 14 has allowed us better depth. Certainly 18 would be a whole nother step.
We're talking with Ryan Soderquist from Bentley. Before we let you go, you're going to take a weekend off this weekend, but you get back to play. You're going to head down to West Point for a Saturday afternoon game. But then Sunday morning should be a pretty special experience for your kids to go to the new Barclays Center and play a game there. Just talk a little bit about what that means for your program to be involved in that event.
Yeah, it's a great event. We're honored to be part of that event, playing Army in the Barclays Center on that Sunday. It's actually Marathon Sunday in New York City. Obviously, our program and our school has a tremendous amount of alumni in the New York area. So we're pretty excited for our school and our alumni to be part of that. The first game being played in the Barclays Center on College Hockey Day. I think it will be great for our guys to get out and see a new arena, play in an arena that they have never played in before. So it should be a great event.
Well, it should be certainly a special event and a big weekend of hockey for you guys down in the greater New York area. Ryan Soderquist, we wish you and your Bentley team the best of luck the rest of the way, and really appreciate your time coming on here joining us tonight.
Thank you, Ed, and I appreciate it, Jim. Thank you.
And we'll be back with more of USCHO Live right after this.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. From U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
Oh, hi. Do you know what this is the sound of? It's the sound of me getting rewarded for doing my part to prevent wildfires. See, right now I'm getting a big, remarkably heartfelt bear hug from Smokey Bear. Thanks, big guy. And now we're shaking. Okay. First, I made sure there were no low-hanging branches when I set up my campfire. Hey, Smokey, let me down for just a second. I need to make sure everyone can hear this. There we go. Then, when we were packing up to leave, I drowned out my campfire, stirred it, drowned it out again, and then made sure to feel it if it was cold. Oh, Smokey Bear really loves it when you do that, don't you, Smokey? Oh, he lets his hugs do the talking. Visit SmokeyBear.com to learn tips to prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you.
This is USCHO Live.
We're back with USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker with Jim Connolly. And Jim, things got a little bit jumbled up on us with some of the technical issues. But one thing that we did want to do is kind of reflect a little bit about the 20 years since Travis Roy was injured. And those 11 seconds of his ice hockey college career happened 20 years ago today.
And I can remember not the day of, but the next day where I was. I mean, you know, it was before the day of Twitter and cell phones and even the internet for that part of, you know, ways of communicating. And we got word, I was with UMass Lowell and we were playing out at Rensselaer the next night, the Saturday night, and we were at a game day skate and somebody said, oh, a kid at BU got really badly banged up last night. And you don't think much of it because you don't, you know, you always hear about players getting hurt. But it was when I got back to the Boston area, get back to campus in Lowell, that you realized how serious this was. This was this was not something that was going to just heal quickly and this kid maybe misses a season or something like this. This was a catastrophic injury. And, you know, this week I've had a chance to go back and read a lot of stories from, you know, many different media outlets and many of them just Travis recounting the whole experience. And it still brings tears to my eyes. You know, we got to hear him tonight talk about what he has been able to accomplish. And it has been fantastic, everything he's done through his foundation to really drive awareness for for spinal cord research, and you know, this is such a crippling injury. But to know that it's still, his life is still difficult every day, and it's really, really hard. And I don't think that any one of us on this earth can even put ourselves in his shoes until we've at least walked one day in them. That really is the reality of how catastrophic an injury it was and how much his life changed, really in an instant. So I, he's a person, I just have so much, like the most utter amount of respect for him of that I could ever have for a person. And it was an honor tonight to have him on the show.
Yeah. I was particularly struck when he talked about even things just like being able to have full diaphragm motion and be able to take a deep breath of air. It was just stunning. Here it is. He's 40 years old now. So half his life now has been spent as a quadriplegic, and he's had to deal with all these things on a daily basis.
Just think about if you've ever been playing sports and you get punched in the gut and you're wheezing for air, and that's kind of his daily life, is that he's always shorter on breathing because of the things he's gone through having pneumonia or whatever, and tracheotomies and everything that he's gone through. He's just so to wake up every morning with a pretty darn good attitude amazes me.
Well, and another thing I mentioned to you briefly before the show, the thing that I also remember from the time after hearing about that injury, which I too also heard about the next day, was any time that there was a serious injury on the ice for like the next year, year and a half, that would be the first thing that would go through my mind. And I think it was probably late 1996 or early 1997. I was broadcasting an RIT game at Mercyhurst. And RIT's smallest player checked one of the bigger players from Mercyhurst. And at the time, the penalty box didn't have glass in the front. And it was sort of a rounded corner with a padding, like you still see in some places.
Sure.
And the player went right into that and then dropped right to the ice on his back. And he was out cold and didn't move. We couldn't tell what the injury was. They actually ended up stopping the period early and picking up play, tacked on to the third period, brought a stretcher out onto the ice, you know, used the board and all that kind of stuff. And we still didn't know what was going on. And as the stretcher was being rolled towards the corner where the ambulance was, the player raised his hand and waved. And, you know, that was a very emotional moment in the arena because Travis's injury was still very fresh in everyone's mind. And so a couple other times after that, when you saw players go down and not see them move, which players don't always move if they're checked hard, you know, there's still their bells rung or whatever. That was still very fresh at the time.
Yeah. I covered the Joe Extra injury when he was injured at Merrimack at Boston College. That was probably about 8 years after the Travis Roy injury. And that one's still, you know, that's still fresh in my head. And that was very different because he had hit his brainstem and was dying on the ice for basically brain failure because, you know, his brainstem had cracked. And, you know, the miracle that you found out afterwards of how he literally had his life saved on the ice. But all of those catastrophic injuries, it brings back into some reality what we watch every night. It just looks like people that just look so fluid out there on the ice. It's so difficult in the physical impact of the game, though it's what we enjoy and it's what we make as part of our lives. It's scary when you really put it into perspective.
Yeah, and then when you see that happen with other players, like out in Minnesota, it was probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago now that Jack Jablonski, a high school player, was injured. And I know there's a player that Travis mentioned in Massachusetts as well.
Norwood High School player. So it's scary, but we love the game for a reason, but it's those moments that kind of put it all back into perspective.
And that's also why sometimes people will hear me getting on officials when they aren't a little bit tighter about some of the stuff that goes on around the boards or around
the
head.
Absolutely.
You can't take chances there. Anyway, it's about time for us to wrap things up, and it's time for us to look at the weekend ahead. Some big games matching up ranked teams. Number 9, St. Cloud is taking its 4-0 record to number 14, Quinnipiac, which as we're recording this, as we're broadcasting it live, late in the third period, Quinnipiac is up 4-0, so we can expect 2 4-0 teams playing next weekend.
Yeah, a huge series to start. That's one, and then Lowell and Merrimack, and that two more. So we only mentioned 7 teams, take the Ivies out, that have unblemished records right now, and 4 of them are going to actually square off next weekend. It's just perfect timing. It's almost the kismet that I feel like happens all the time in college hockey. But it should be that both of those series are ones to keep your eye on. I think that both of them have some really great hockey to look at.
I love that there are so many non-conference games available with the league realignment. Number 15, Miami, going up to a venerable ECAC arena, Appleton Arena up at St. Lawrence to take on the number 17 Saints for a pair. And then number 11, Michigan, heading to Schenectady for a couple at Messer Rink, number 18 Union taking them on.
Yeah, pre-Big Ten days and the days where Michigan had, you know, 6 or 8 non-league games. And for one thing, none of them were ever played outside of Ann Arbor, and never did they usually travel to a team like Union. So it's great to see Michigan getting to hit the road and play some of these tougher buildings. You know, people forget that, you know, Union is one of the hardest buildings to play in the road. You heard of the atmosphere that Bentley created last week. So triple the size of that crowd, and it's that same atmosphere. So that'll be a rocking house. And I think every place that Michigan goes, they were able to draw the crowd, and it becomes a great atmosphere. But that should be a great atmosphere on Friday. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in Mesa that night, because that is a absolutely fantastic building to put that team into.
Yeah, both those ECAC rinks, wooden bleachers, that great sound that it makes when people are stomping on them. Wow, atmosphere.
And those low ceilings.
yeah. And in Hockey East, number 7, UMass Lowell, and number 19, Merrimack, playing a home-and-home series. Two interesting teams, two teams that, Jim, I would say that look very different, but, you know, Merrimack putting 10 goals in last weekend, who knows?
It's an eye-opener, and if they can continue to do that, I mean, Lowell played them 3 times last year, including one time out at the Mariucci tournament in Minnesota, and it feels like a mismatch, but every single time that those two teams get together, it certainly is not, and goaltending has been a factor, and you know, just a good defensive scheme that Mark Dennehy's team usually draws up. And it's usually matched by Norm Bazin's team, who can draw up a very good defensive scheme. So I look at that as a really, it's kind of a pivotal early season series for those two teams. Their league games, they count, you know, first game league games on each of their slates. But it also gives them, each of them, kind of a measuring stick, and more so Merrimack, that they get a measuring stick. You know, are we worthy of a national ranking right now? And that they have a chance to prove that on Friday night when they host the Riverhawks.
And finally, exhibition games for the Ivy League schools. And by next weekend, the weekend after this coming one, everybody will finally be in action. So that's what's coming up. Hopefully you have an opportunity to get out to one of the rinks near you and check out some college hockey, or check out the TV schedule at uscho.com/TV.
It should be another great weekend of hockey. I look forward to it every weekend. But, calling Lowell's games and heading to their rival Merrimack, maybe I like this weekend a little bit more.
Well, with that, Jim, we'll let everyone go. It's been great to have our two guests on, Travis Roy, a terrific interview, and Ryan Soderquist, his Bentley Falcons, with that sweet last weekend and a well-deserved weekend off.
Very well deserved.
Yep. And so until next time, we'll catch you at USCHO Live, perhaps at a different URL next week, as we try out possibly a different method of bringing you this program. So until then, take care and enjoy the hockey.